On the line now, I have Nolan Blackwell, who is Director General of FLEC, Free Legal Advice Centres. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Thank you very, very much for taking the call. I know you're only shortly back in the country.
I was yesterday in Brussels talking at a European Parliament meeting about the effects of austerity on human rights. So it was mainly focused on the Greek situation there. But in fact, it's a useful kind of preparation for our conversation today, because the topic we're going to be talking about really has a very big focus on how the regime that was put in place when the financial crisis started and when the banks started to fail, that regime really operated on the basis that the banks and the finances had to be fixed first, and that people and human rights had to wait. And that was the approach that was applied with us in Ireland, certainly FLEC would say. And I was interested then, when I was asked to take part in an examination of the situation in Greece, I was interested to see that exactly the same set of, the same approach had been used in the Greek situation. And so the same remedies were suggested, but they led to even worse results than the austerity regime led to in Ireland. But that's all by way of saying that when we then got around to looking at where was the Irish government held to account, or where did it have to account to the people of Ireland for how it was protecting economic rights, social rights, like the right to, you know, the right to work, the right to proper housing, the right to health? Where was it held to account? And what we found was that, you know, you could go at it bit by bit in the Dáil. You could go to one place or you could go to another. But there's nowhere in Ireland that you can actually go over the range of economic, social and cultural measures by which Ireland is bound. There was no body in Ireland to whom you could satisfactorily make your case. And if Ireland was found wanting, that it would be said. You know, the courts don't want to, for the most part, they don't want to talk about economic and social rights. There's a limited right to education in our constitution, but say there's no right to housing. There's a right to private property for people, but there's no right to a decent house. So these things aren't contained in our constitution. And Ireland, in 1989, signed up to a UN convention where they guaranteed and undertook solemnly in law to protect and promote and to respect people's economic, social and cultural rights. That's a UN covenant, and they are bound by it. But in fact, they have never brought it into our law, so that you can't use it in the Irish courts very much. There is no human rights committee in the Oireachtas where you can bring all of these things to. And so the only body still that would hear about all of these things was the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, which is the oversight body. It's the main body of experts put in place to ensure, but also to help states to meet their legal obligations to preserve rights. And the way they oversee it is by asking countries to report every 5 years to the committee about how they are protecting and respecting rights like the right to health, the right to work, the right to a decent education, and the right to be free from serious poverty, you know, the right to food, a whole lot of the right to an adequate standard of living. So Ireland is supposed to report every 5 years on foot of this covenant, and the committee operates by looking at the Irish report and then saying, well, look, that's the government's opinion. What do the people say? And so what we did in FLEC was, when the government reported this time, what we did was to say, look, we have things we want to say about how people's rights were not well protected during the recession. And we thought a lot of other organisations that we work with as well through our Public Interest Law Alliance, a lot of other organisations have things to say as well. So This we took it on ourselves to kind of coordinate a way for everybody to feed into one report, and we put in two big reports into that committee so that they would get another view from non-governmental societies, and the Human Rights Commission did another view themselves as well, and then some other organisations. So the committee looked at all of that information, and then Ireland was examined on the 8th and 9th of June at Geneva. There were representatives over there from non-governmental organisations, from the Human Rights Commission, and on Monday of this week, day before yesterday, the committee issued its conclusions.
Right. Now, I printed out this report, and it's 11 pages long, and I think that the first page, maybe there's a page of positive aspects.
Exactly.
And the next 10 pages, Nolan, are subjects of concern and recommendations.
Yeah.
Now, there's much too many of them to go into them all. One of the things that jumped out at me was, and this would be of great interest to FLAC, is the committee is concerned at the lack of free legal aid services.
Yeah, in a wide number of areas. In fact, this was a point that we were making as ourselves as well as leading this delegation, because, for instance, if you take somebody who loses their job, they're unfairly dismissed from work. They're not allowed to have legal aid. If they can't afford a private lawyer, they're not allowed to have legal aid at the Employment Appeals Tribunal. That's because when the tribunal was set up 30 years ago now, I think, or thereabouts, maybe not quite that long, but nearly that long. It is over. The whole idea was that it was to be an informal process, where people could just go in, workers could just go in and make their complaint, and employers could just go in and make their case. That isn't what happens now, though. Employers go in. Normally, a big employer would have a human resources department that would have been through this with a fine-tooth comb. They go in, they have a solicitor, they have a junior barrister, they may have a senior barrister. And the person who has lost their job, whose job is at risk, has no entitlement to legal aid at all. So in that tribunal, and in the Social Welfare Appeals Tribunal, very big, complicated issues are often decided. And the people with power have all the resources they need for those. And the people without the power and without the money have no entitlement to legal aid. We also pointed out that in the area of people who are trying to restructure their mortgage debt, they don't get assistance. They don't get legal aid at all. And again, you're talking about a big, powerful, professional bank with a whole team, with tens of thousands of euros every month devoted to it, pitched against somebody who's trying to keep their own home, and the person keeping their own home isn't entitled to legal aid. So they particularly mention that in the areas of employment, housing and social welfare benefits, things that really affect people, very, very complicated areas. I mean, in social welfare, often the people who are making the decisions don't even know the law. And the way we know that is that on appeal, over half the cases are overturned. You know, so people are going in, they're going in without knowing how to make their case properly. They're not able to challenge the decision maker, and they're losing out as a result. So that is definitely something that the state really needs to look at. Legal aid is not about giving money to lawyers. It is about making sure that people who need legal assistance to deal with a legal problem when they have it, that they get that. That's all that legal aid should be about. The system as it stands at the moment isn't able to cope. There are great people working in the civil legal aid scheme, fantastic solicitors, but they've long waiting lists. They have too much to do, and they can really only focus in on a few areas, principally on family law.
Yeah, we're in the Civic Centre out here in Coolock, and the Free Legal Aid office is just down the hall from us, and also Citizens Information. And as you say, they're out the door.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the other services, so like Out With You, Northside Community Law Centre, as it was, Community Law and Mediation, as we now know it, is a brilliant resource for people that they can just go into. It's an alternative to the state-funded legal aid service. So too, citizens' information. An awful lot of people need information. Information now is power. It helps you be more powerful when you have it. They do a brilliant job, and they also work with us. Now, they don't have to in Coolock because you have the community law and mediation there. But all around the country as well, FLAC volunteers go into citizens' information centres maybe one evening a week or one evening a month, or depending on the need in a particular area, and give free, confidential legal advice to people, which is a lifeline. Often, you know, you might be entitled to state-funded legal aid, but if you have to wait for it for a year, what are you to do in the meantime? So the FLAC services around the country run in conjunction with and often organised by the citizens' information centres are a brilliant resource as well. But that shouldn't be necessary. You know, you'll always have more legal need maybe than you can cope with. But it shouldn't be the case that just because they're in an area of law, like they've lost their job, that they can't get legal aid at all, no matter how poor they are or no matter how unfair the decision is. That's wrong.
Yeah, now I don't think it mentions it in this report, but there's also it is zero-hour contracts, and employers seem to be jumping on the bandwagon to an extent, and more or less abusing. Like we saw the thing with the Clearys, we saw the thing with the Dunstores workers.
Yeah. It does actually come up in the report. This is a report that we have up on the front page of our website on www.flac.ie, and that is worth looking at just for the range of things that bothered this committee. And one of them is the fact that Ireland has signed up to give people the right to just and favourable conditions of work. That's what people are entitled to expect. Now, they're not saying that everyone is entitled to a job under any circumstances. That's the kind of scaremongering that goes on about human rights. But in relation to work, if you have work, your conditions should be just and favourable. And one of the things they did pick out was that people who are on 0 hours or low-hour contracts, they're more correctly called in Ireland, that they have very limited access to labour protection. And so, for instance, one of the things they're saying, let the Low Pay Commission bill go through, and let the Low Pay Commission, which is setting up right now, look at other things, not just low pay, but also people who might not be on particularly low pay, but when they're only getting 15 hours a week at any time of the week that suits the employer, then they don't have an adequate minimum wage.
Okay, now I'm going to jump ahead to another thing here that jumped out at me. It's the state party's response to the crisis has been disproportionately focused on instituting cuts.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that affects everybody.
Yeah, now this is the big thing, and it kind of links back into what I was saying at the start of the conversation as well. So when everyone is quite frank about this in government, really, when the financial crisis hit, and our banks looked like they were going to collapse, that was the single item on the agenda of government. It was also the single item on the agenda of the European Union, because we were in a euro currency and we put that currency at risk. And the committee makes the point that they have sympathy with the situation that Ireland found itself in when it was hit by a financial crisis and a banking crisis at the same time. Whoever was to blame for it was hit by it. But they say that the problem was that, and they also recognise it was unprecedented, never happened before like this. But they say that the state focused too much on cuts to public expenditure in key areas for people. So in the areas of housing, social security, healthcare and education, and they didn't look to other alternatives,
like the tax
and
regime.
And that's the problem. If you have a human rights structure in place, you're bound by it every single day. You can't just say we'll ignore it and we'll come back to human rights when we're ready. So when the crisis hit and we went into a bailout program, we got money on conditions from the European Union through the Central Bank and the European Commission and from the IMF. And that money was given on the basis that we carry out an awful lot of reforms, which were all based on cutting services. Human rights, law and practice required the government to do something different. At the time that they were thinking about what they were going to do, they should, of course, look at where there was fat, you know, where they didn't need to spend money and they were spending it unnecessarily. And some things were bound to get cut on that basis. But before they cut into basic services, which actually weren't adequate anyway, I mean, there were still waiting lists in hospitals and the rest of it. This just made a bad situation worse. But before they did all of that, they should have done human rights assessments, social impact assessments. What is the impact of those? Who is going to be left vulnerable? And what measures do we take to make sure that people's right to live in dignity isn't damaged by this? And if they couldn't find any way out, then they should have gone back to the European Union and to the International Monetary Fund, and they should have said, we can't make that cut right now because these people will be hurt by it. And these people will not be able to live a life of basic dignity. And then they should have looked at other ways of doing it. For instance, would it have been possible to increase some taxation? Would it have been possible to adjust some other program? What were the steps we could take? But if nothing could be done, unless it actually damaged people who were already poor and miserable, or people who were made poor by the crisis because they were put out of work and had unpayable debts, if the only option was to hurt those people so they could no longer live in dignity, our state should not have done it. And that's what the UN committee says. Now, the committee has said this before, and it actually issued a letter to governments saying they needed to take account of this because it's a solemn legal obligation. And the thing is, if our government had gone back to the European Union and said, we can't do it because we are going to break our obligations under the UN Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, well, the EU would have had to accept it. They would have had to change their conditions because all of the countries in the EU are bound by this as well. So we did not even give ourselves the negotiating position that we could have because we did not take account of our human rights obligations. And the other part of this then is the committee also makes the point in this report, and it has made it before, and it is law, so it should be done. If you have to make austerity cuts for the duration of a crisis, well, they must be temporary, and you must have a plan as to when they're going to be removed. So, for instance, take one that is being put back in place. Child benefit was cut. A bit of child benefit has been put back. We're promised another bit to be put back this autumn. So there's one where you say child benefit was taken away, child benefit is being put back. But what about all the other austerity cuts that were put in place? What about all the special needs assistance that are not employed in our schools anymore? What about all the associated benefits in relation to, say, lone parents who are facing yet another cut to their benefit next week? So the committee says, look, if you even thought you could justify those austerity cuts, now tell us when they're all going to be removed and why they still need to be in place at all. And that's where this committee's thinking is useful, not only to people like us who try to fight for people's rights, but it's actually really useful to a state as well. If we had a structure in place so that our government could not make these cuts without doing a human rights assessment, first of all, it would be good for the people of the country. And secondly, it would have given the government a tool to say to the external bankers, now, wait a minute, lads, we can't actually do that, because if we did, we would be breaching our basic, our legal obligations.
Yeah, and they didn't do any of that.
None of that. They don't have it. There is no structure in place. And that's why then, when you look at what comes out of this committee, it's the next part is we're going to take a deep breath and just take a week to rest because it was a huge endeavour. But the next bit of this then is we are going to give all of this back to all of the organisations that we consulted with, all of the 80 plus organisations that took place. We'll say, you pick out of it what's useful to you and you work on that. So for instance, SLAC will be using the recommendation in relation to legal aid, the recommendation in relation to better social welfare appeal systems, you know, in relation to housing and the trouble for people in mortgage debt. We'll be using all of those, as well as trying to get structures put in place that would actually allow the government to consider this as a matter just of routine. You know, they look at all the other legal implications of everything they do. Why aren't they looking at their human rights obligations? And probably partly because they're not going to get fined or put to jail if they don't do it. You know, that's not going to happen to them. But Ireland is a country that does like to be thought of as a country that respects human rights. You know, it's not just an embarrassment, it's a real reputation that the Irish government and the Irish state likes to have. It likes to have that reputation for doing the right thing, for doing the good thing. So we're going to use these recommendations to try and push for better systems to be put in place, because on foot of this, it's clear, coming right through all the recommendations as well, if you were strong, if you were reasonably well off, if you kept your job, you probably were able to wobble through. But the real damage was done to people who had any sort of an extra impediment, you know, if you had a disability, like your already limited capacity to work went down. The government can do something about restoring the numbers of people with disabilities who are in the workforce. The pay gap between men and women continued to increase during the recession. The government could do something about ensuring more equality between men and women in relation to work and other things. The government is looking at direct provision now for asylum seekers. That came up. The government is looking at the situation of the poor women who were in the Magdalen laundries. Some redress has been put in place, but the committee is saying, look, it's not enough. It's not giving people the justice that they need. And then there's some really interesting ones coming up as well. If I can just mention a couple, John, that you wouldn't necessarily hear as much about as some of the others. For instance, the right to food is part of the right to an adequate standard of living. And one of the groups that got involved with us was the Irish Heart Foundation, which is very big into healthy eating and was able to produce the facts and the figures showing the need for a nutrition, a plan and a strategy to have a better nourished people. Not necessarily more nourished, because obesity is a problem, but better nourished people. And another thing that came up from rural Ireland was the fact that when people don't have access to broadband, they're actually excluded from information, they're excluded from public services, you know, you can't register for your tax online. There's a whole lot of things that don't happen. So they make provision about that and says the state party needs to intensify its efforts to expand broadband internet. But people like travellers, migrants and the Roma people, single parent families, these are the people that are affected in nearly all of them. And one of the things actually that came up in relation to work, it came up in relation to women's rights, it came up in relation to a whole lot of things, was the lack of adequate, affordable, accessible childcare. So, you know, and again, I don't care what conversation you're in, if there's anybody in the conversation who has a child, a child up to a late teenager, they are all impeded by the lack of affordable, accessible childcare. And that's one of the things that, again, you would hope that the government would try to prioritise, because it would allow people to work. It would mean you wouldn't have so many people on social security. You know, there's a whole lot of good to come out of it.
Okay, we could have done nearly 2 hours on this, Nolan.
I'm afraid I'm talking too long.
Not at all. No, yeah. It's just the clock is beating us. I actually have citizens' information coming up next. Now, this is a fantastic report, and I think everybody should read it, including the government. And can you see our government actually acting on this, in particular about the austerity cuts, and putting an end to those cuts and maybe giving them back? Can you see that?
Well, I think if we all stay focused on the need to that be done, and if we all know that this isn't just in the gift of the government, this is a legal obligation that they have, if not to say when they're going to remove temporary measures. But if the government, this is guidance to the government. It's not saying you must do it in any particular way, but everybody listening, all the other organisations who are working for social justice, if we all take this document and take the bits out of it that we can do something about, we can make it a better country, because the committee will not be interested to hear when we come back before them again that nothing was done about these things. They'll take that very badly. In fact, one of the things that happened was that Ireland was very, very late putting in this report. They knew they weren't going to get an easy time, given that the recession had taken place and given that social progress had not taken place at the same time. They will have to go back to this committee. They will also have to go to other UN committees. The next one coming up is the Rights of Children. And that committee will take account of what it says in this report about children and the effects of austerity on children. And this report does talk about that. So, like, it's always a process. You try and work at home, and then you try and get an objective understanding from somebody outside, like this committee. This committee vindicated everything we and other organisations have been saying for years about the failure to observe fundamental human rights. It is the truth that the Irish government it took its eye off the human rights ball entirely during the crisis. It was wrong to do that. And I think we can continue to press to say, look, here it is. This isn't just us having a moan. This is actually an expert committee that you agreed should look at this for you. And they have come back and they have said, this needs changing, that needs fixing. So fix it. And I think we'll all keep it up. Now, it won't be done all at once. But even if there was a plan to address all of these things, it would be marvellous.
Because it's a United Nations report, hopefully they will have to pay attention
exactly.
to it. Listen, Nolan, thank you very, very much for taking the call, and we'll have to talk again, because there's lots more in this report.
Loads in it. Yes. Yeah. It'll take years to wash out even, you know, just we will be able to use the information and the recommendations in this report for years to advance better lives for people, lives of dignity.
Right, Nolan, once again, thanks very much for taking the call
at
such short notice, and we will talk again. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.